Here on Afternoon Classical, we've been talking about music that is essential, and we've been talking to listeners and the folks who I call experts, and we've got one of those experts with us today. Kevin Rhodes is music director for the Traverse Symphony Orchestra. Kevin, thanks so much for joining me today.
Hey, Judy, it's great to talk to you.
How are you?
I am just fine, I can happily say. And all of my family, and we're all just fine. We are all extraordinarily socially distanced, but distanced to the point of being thousands of miles apart. But everyone is good wherever they are.
And where are you?
I am my wife Jane. We are in Western Massachusetts, which is where our home has been for the past, 18 years, since 2002. Yes, after we moved back from Europe.
And how have you been spending this time?
Well, you know, there's been a lot of time, spent making contingency plans based upon the situation as we understood it at any given moment in time, and which also means that then the next day you throw out those plans and make new plans based on the new details that you have. So basically like everybody else, trying to plan a way forward, but discovering every day that the path is going to be a little bit different than you imagined.
Yes, we've had to go way beyond Plan B, haven't we?
Oh, my God. Plan B was about on March 16th.
Yes. So you are music director of the Traverse Symphony Orchestra, of course, based in Traverse City, Michigan. You are in Massachusetts, so you hold other posts, too.
Yes, I'm also the music director of the Springfield Symphony Orchestra in Springfield, Massachusetts. We're very, live very close to there. And I'm also the principal conductor for the Pro Arte Chamber Orchestra in Boston. And the other part of my life is that I spend a lot of time with a lot of the world's great ballet companies conducting for them, something I've been doing now since the mid-90s.
How did you get started on this path, Kevin?
Well, it absolutely goes back to a public school, and it goes back to, in its most initial form, it goes back to kindergarten, with the teacher playing songs on the piano, and we would sit around and sing them. And I thought, oh my gosh, that's such an amazing thing, pushing down those white and black things, and these sounds come out, I gotta be able to do that. And so that's where I first got the idea for music. A few years later, to after a teacher at school had convinced my parents to make lessons possible for me. And then I was playing for the school choir at 10 and 11, and then playing for musicals at school and middle school shortly after that, and then started conducting them at 16. So, but I really emphasize public school in my history, because I really think it's important that anyone who ever hears my voice realizes that the importance of the arts in public schools, because I'm a complete product of that, not a conservatory, not a private school, and certainly not parents who listen to Beethoven and Brahms or radio broadcasts from the Metropolitan Opera. They ran a trucker diner, and school was where I got music.
Your parents also supported what you did.
They did. They didn't understand it, you know, because, you know, they were fans of country music. And so that wasn't what I was doing in lessons, but they absolutely supported it. But and sadly, they died when I was very young, so they never got to see any of my quote unquote accomplishments.
Kevin, you mentioned, of course, the arts in the public schools. Tell me how you feel about that now, the situation now.
Well, I think, you know, it is so imperative. I mean, we are being reminded, every single person, every day, by how important the arts are, because everyone is turning to entertainment, is turning to art, is turning to television, their radios, their podcasts, their pads. They the amount of people turning to this right now, you know, around the clock in their house is really amazing. And without those art schools programs, if you took out every person from every movie, every television show, everything that's ever been recorded, every album, every CD, if you took out everybody who got their start in public school, you'd have nothing. You'd have maybe you'd have just a handful of people. You would absolutely have nothing. And that so oftentimes when cuts need to be made, they are just without thought, of course, made to the arts because those aren't important in quotation marks. That is such a tragedy for all of us, for all of those young artists who will never discover that they are artists because it wasn't part of their school. And as a society, we are going to be so much poorer, and some would argue perhaps already are, because so many generations of children have missed out on arts education.
And you mentioned you got started in kindergarten, and you must have had a very special teacher and special teachers along the way. Is there one or two teachers that you remember especially that really set your course?
Well, too many to even begin naming them.
That's good.
We would have to take your entire broadcast afternoon for me to go through all of the teachers who made a dramatic difference in my life. And I'm very thrilled that some of them I am in touch with to this day.
Oh, that's wonderful. And you mentioned you got started in kindergarten. We're playing for...
I got the idea in kindergarten. Uh-huh. I didn't start lessons until about a year and a half later, but I got the idea in kindergarten, absolutely.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. By the time you were 11 or 12, accompanying the choir and then conducting at 16. Wow. And then it just took off from there.
Yeah. Given the fact I started conducting so long ago, I actually should be a lot better at it than I am. But, you know, I do what I can.
Well, you certainly stay busy. So, Kevin, thank you so much for your support of the arts in public schools. And as so many people know, it is so, so important to have arts in the schools and in the home and on the radio and however we can get it. And, of course, now things are so different because we can't gather in person and have that live experience.
Indeed.
But we have recordings, and that's what we can do. And some of the recordings we have are live recordings, and it is sad that we can't gather and experience these concerts and this music and the arts in person. But it is fun to listen to these live recordings. And one of the pieces of music that you suggested that's important to you, this is from a live recording. Can you tell us a little bit about Perpetual Motion?
Oh, yes. This Perpetual Mobile from Strauss, you know, this belongs to that whole great Viennese school. And Vienna is a place that I feel so lucky. That's an understatement. I am truly blessed that Vienna has been a part of my life for so long. And I first just sort of fell into the orbit of the Vienna State Opera conducting a couple ballets for them. When I was I'd been in Europe, I guess about 4 years at that point. I was about 30. And then after a few performances, they made me the principal ballet conductor. And the orchestra at the Vienna State Opera is the Vienna Philharmonic. They're called the Vienna State Opera Orchestra. When they play there, when they go into a concert or make a recording like the one you have, they're called the Vienna Philharmonic. Mm-hmm. And they have certainly at that point in time, they had a reputation as being a tough orchestra. But they were always very, very nice to me. There was always a great chemistry there. That didn't affect how nervous I was every time I would go and conduct. But it's a great experience. So everything Viennese is very special to me. And this piece featured on one of the first ballet evenings I did there. We had a whole, the ballet director created a whole hour-long choreographic piece made up of many different pieces by Strauss. And I thought, my gosh, what am I doing here? I'm, you know, Kevin from Indiana, from a trucker diner, conducting the Vienna Philharmonic in one of these pieces, the Perpetua Mobile, or the Frühlingsstimmen, the Voices of Spring, and so many others. But I did it, and it brings back great memories. And this piece is just really, really fun. And I don't know if the recording you have will have this, but the tradition with that piece is to make a repeat back to the beginning and literally repeat and fade. And then and the conductor should turn around and say, and so forth, and so forth, and so forth, and so forth. So it's a real musical joke, and that's the tradition with it. Like I say, maybe that's on your recording. I don't know.
What a wonderful memory. And, you know, I was thinking, to conduct a ballet is a whole different thing, because you've got dancers on stage, and if your tempo is a little bit too fast or a little bit slow, you've got all those other folks on stage to worry about.
Oh, yes. It is a very different thing to gauge the, I'll try to go a philosophical step further than speed, but to gauge the inner rhythm, the inner heartbeat of a piece and how it's fitting with your soloist. That's an entirely different thing when it's dance as opposed to when it's voice or piano, violin, whatever. And so that takes a long time to learn. And another aspect to it is that you have to be such a super self-critically objective monitor of what you do, because you can't just let yourself go and say, oh, hey, you know, it's feeling good, let's move a little faster, or let's move a little slower,
right? Mm-hmm.
We'll stretch it out. You know, you have to be very cognizant of what you are doing. Now, that all being said, sometimes you have some incredible artists on stage with whom you have a great rapport, and indeed you can play with each other in a really fun way that is exactly with a singer or a violinist. But there has to exist a special chemistry for that to be able to happen.
Well, let's listen to Perpetual Motion. Here is a recording. It's a vinyl recording, an LP from 1980. It's the Gala New Year's Concert in Vienna from 1980, featuring the Vienna Philharmonic. They're conducted by Lorne Mazel. My guest today is Kevin Rhodes. He is music director of the Traverse Symphony Orchestra in Traverse City, Michigan, and he is one of our musical experts. We're talking about music that is essential to us, music that lifts us up in times when we need it most. So welcome again, Kevin.
Judy, it's great to be with you again today.
And we are very much socially distanced. You're on the phone speaking to us from Western Massachusetts.
Correct. And you're in Western Michigan.
Yeah, Central Michigan at Central Michigan University. So you are music director of the Traverse Symphony Orchestra. How long have you been at that post?
I started with the Traverse Symphony in the fall of 2001. And my very first subscription concert as part of the regular season with that orchestra was just a few days after September 11th. And I never will forget that week. Obviously, none of us will, and we all have our where were you when. But I know exactly where I was on that Tuesday morning, and I was in Traverse. We had rehearsed, done some rehearsals for that first concert, and I met with our staff and board that afternoon and said, okay, are we going to do the concert? Are we not going to? And we decided to go ahead with it. And so if Tuesday was the 11th, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, so I guess the concert must have been on the 15th and the 16th that weekend. And we, you know, added a piece to the program at the beginning of the concert. And I remember that very first, that night of that, of the 11th, we had a rehearsal scheduled. And so we decided to go ahead and do it. And we started the rehearsal. I said, hey, guys, let's just play the Star-Spangled Banner to begin. And so all of those experiences together for me that week, and I should add to that that my wife, now of many, many decades, but she had just arrived from Europe on the evening of the 10th there in Traverse City and for that first concert. And so, oh, my gosh, so many memories. Excuse me, that's a very long answer, but yes.
What was on that first program?
We, of course, had the national anthem. We had added the Fanfare for the Common Man by Copland. as a tribute to the 9/11 experiences. Then we had a piece from the very first concert of the orchestra, because that was the orchestra's 50th season. And so we played the suite from the Carmen Suite by Bizet, which they had played on their very first concert. A special piece was written for the orchestra by a former music director, and that for this anniversary. So we played this as well. And I feel like we did one other piece on the first half, but I don't recall what that one might have been. But on the second half of the program, the big symphony was Tchaikovsky 4th.
Wow, what a program. And I would think that meeting with your orchestra that week must have really accelerated your bonding experience with the musicians.
No, yeah, it was, I mean, every now and then, you know, we will still have occasion, some of those of us who were around back then, to talk about that, day. It was really, that evening, rather. It was really amazing, really amazing.
So you've had a long run with the Traverse Symphony. What is going on now with the organization? How are you keeping in touch with the musicians? What's happening now?
Well, you know, we are making we've been making lots of contingency plans, which, you know, every week we have to throw out and do something new. You know, one of our big challenges in terms of looking at the next 12 to 14 months has been that the Interlochen Arts Academy, which is where we most often perform in the big hall there, has closed itself off to non-students and faculty, to non-school events for the entire next calendar year. And so that is their response to the pandemic, and a lot of everything about that makes sense. It does, however, leave the orchestra very much at odds. However, the way the world is looking, we're not quite sure exactly when we're going to be able to get back to playing with a full complement. So we are making plans for a full season of very small events, very small numbers of musicians, small audience, but a lot of them. So we are, as opposed to fewer large things, we're hoping to do a whole lot more very small things. And, you know, and we're really approaching this as a time when, since we are prevented from pursuing our normal concert activities, we're using this time to do a lot of things that we normally don't have time for. And so we've been doing a lot of online work. We've been doing a lot of outreach, we're trying to hit as many people in as many places as they are. But obviously it's a very different kind of work than just saying, okay, we're going to have a concert on this date and 1,000 people show up in the audience and 75 people show up on stage and we play. It's a very different picture than that, for sure.
Can you give me some examples of the smaller type events that you're hoping to have and have more of those?
Well, actually we haven't gone public with that. So other than saying that we are going to be doing a lot of chamber music, chamber orchestra in places, we're going to try to do small things in big places. That's kind of my motto, right? Because, you know, we have to plan on being able to socially distance audience by families, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, so we're looking at doing small things in big places.
Because we can't do big things in small places.
We certainly can't do that, and we can't do big things in big places.
Yeah.
So the only option left is
small things in big places. I like that. I like that.
Yeah, you know, I haven't actually said that out loud in that way, but maybe I've just hit on a new marketing slogan.
I was just thinking the same thing, and you heard it here first.
I'm going to write it down right now.
Let's write that down. Small things in big places.
I'm going to have a staff Zoom meeting very shortly, and so I'm going to not forget that.
And we will keep everybody posted, whatever those small things in big places are. And
thank you. But to continue answering your question, we are definitely planning on next summer being back You know, maybe still not putting 80 people on stage at once. That's, we may have to wait until the fall of 2021 for that. But we are definitely planning on doing a lot of things next summer with more people and hitting more and reaching more people. So there's lots of stuff going on in the background.
Well, thank you so much for being creative. I knew that even in troubled times that creative folks would step up and come up with some great ideas. And so thanks for doing that. And we will keep folks posted on all of those small things in big places, you know, small but mighty and very important.
Right.
So thanks so much for doing that. Kevin, let's listen to some more music that you like.
By all means.
You're a big fan of Beverly Sills.
When I was, you know, when I was a kid, and, you know, I don't have any reason to be coy about my age. I was born in 64. So when I was growing up, you know, the Tonight Show, Beverly Sills came on the Tonight Show all the time. And you know, because my home was maybe a little bit different than many. I grew up watching the Tonight Show every night.
I was going to say you were staying up late.
Yeah. Well, like I said, you know, ours was a slightly, you know, non-traditional house, perhaps in many ways. And so I if I go on YouTube right now and watch old shows of the Tonight Show from the 70s, I go, oh, I saw them all. And now as an adult, I'm thinking, why was I awake so late? But in any event, I wasn't my own parent. Anyway, so she was really the first opera singer that I encountered because she came on the Tonight Show and the Muppet Show and all kinds of places. And so, and I just found her so delightful in so many ways, you know. And then when I began to learn about opera, study opera, I so oftentimes kept coming back to her recordings because I always felt there was such an incredible joy came through in everything she did. And that joy really, really struck me even as a child, even, you know, maybe I didn't have the words to use for it then. And so she's always remained one of my favorite artists, even when maybe, in this aria, I maybe prefer what somebody else did. I always love coming back to her because of this joy. And this aria, Je suis Titania from Mignon, is, you know, it doesn't even matter what she's singing about. Don't even think about that. Just listen to this incredibly fun, glorious person make beautiful art.
Kevin, she had that sparkling voice and that dazzling smile. And may I share my own Beverly Sills story with you?
Sure.
When I was a young person, my parents liked opera, and I had, I was quite the nerd and still am, and was reading up on all sorts of musicians and performers and read her book called Bubbles. That was her nickname, Bubbles.
Sure.
Read that and became very interested in her. And sure enough, she was going to retire and she was taking her last tour. And she was in our neck of the woods and about an hour and a half away. And my parents got tickets to a performance at Severance Hall in Cleveland, and they took me out of school early. And it must have been interesting for the teacher to get a note, you know, Judy needs to leave early today because she's going to see an opera. But my parents took me out of school early. They must have had to get out of work early, too. I don't remember too much about it, but I do remember making the trip. My dad, you know, looking for a parking space and trying to get us to the hall, the whole thing. And we saw, I believe it was Daughter of the Regiment. I don't remember a lot about it, except that we were very far away from the stage, you know, kind of in the cheap seats. But we had our binoculars, and my mom had opera glasses, which, of course, were very, very elegant, right?
Nice.
And I saw Beverly Sills, and I remember seeing her through those binoculars and opera glasses, and there was that dazzling smile. And that's my Beverly Sills story. I got to see her just before she retired. And when I pulled out this recording for you, this vinyl recording with this aria on it, I looked and a memory came back to me and I said, I had this recording too. Not this very one that was in our library, but this is the recording that I listened to over and over again. So thank you for bringing back that memory for me too.
Oh, my pleasure.
Here's Beverly Sills. My guest today is Kevin Rhodes. He is music director of the Traverse Symphony Orchestra in Traverse City, along with some other posts too, including the Springfield Symphony in Massachusetts. Indeed, Kevin is joining me on the phone from Massachusetts. Thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you, Judy, for having me. It's great to chat with you.
We have learned a lot about you and how music in the public school was so important and really set you on your path, and that now you are dedicated to bringing music to as many people as possible through outreach.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's absolutely crucial in my estimation that as many people as possible are able to know about this incredible art form and leave the fact that maybe there's a lot of things they don't know about it at the door. That's not important. But anyway, but that, now I get on my soapbox about how intimidating musical knowledge can be for someone who doesn't have it. Lots of foreign words, lots of things you feel like you should know, but you don't. And I just always want to be the first guy to say, forget all of that. It's totally unimportant. For those who remember the television show Frasier, I always had the phrase the Frasier factor, meaning that some people might feel like they have to be able to talk like those guys to come to a concert, and that's absolutely not the case. My family talked like the Beverly Hillbillies, but yet they would come to concerts after I started doing them. So there.
Well, thank you for getting on your soapbox. We at WCMU feel the same way. It's just music. It's good music. Just listen and see what happens and find out what happens.
Absolutely.
You know, music obviously has been around since the dawn of time. What do you think it is, you know, even in troubled times or any time, that we turn to music?
Well, if you know, of course, I think I'll get very big picture here. When you no longer have, and by big picture, I mean, what's some of the first music that ever existed? Certainly were human beings, the Ur human beings, chanting together in what would become notes, would become pitches, would become songs. And so singing is kind of really the whole start of it. And why do you sing when mere words are no longer enough to express the emotion? So we can extrapolate that to mean the greatest music is really to express that for which words by themselves are not enough.
Yes, yes. Wow, well said, well said. One of the pieces of music that you suggested is by a composer who really did that in a very big way, Beethoven.
And oh my gosh, yes.
And speaking of music for troubled times and for all times, you have suggested the last movement of the Symphony No. 3, the Eroica.
Yes. So why this piece by that composer and that specific movement? Well, you know, I think, you know, certainly if you study the piano, one of the first guys that you're ever going to encounter once you move away from children's, method books where you are just first learning out what the notes are and everything, one of the first composers you will encounter is Beethoven. In some of his easier works, the ubiquitous Für Elise, the first movement of the Moonlight Sonata, maybe one of the sonatinas or something. the G major sonata, right, from the so-called easy sonatas. Mm-hmm. And so Beethoven is there for almost every musician who does anything, who's had any kind of formal course of study. So he's incredibly important that way. But he's also in, oh my gosh, this is the topic of a dissertation. So let me try to get cut a little bit straight to the point. With Beethoven's Third Symphony, this is one of the, at the time it was written, one of the newest sounding pieces ever for its time. And really was, in many, many ways, the first piece for which sounding new was really one of its goals, right? Mm-hmm. Breaking out of the boundaries of the past is really an objective of this piece of music in a way that almost never had existed, right? Haydn never, like totally redefined harmony. Even the incredible Mozart, even with some of the places that he went chromatically, he didn't redefine harmony. Beethoven redefined harmony and structure and everything to do with music, whose influences can be felt all the way up to the classical composers of today and the DJs of today in this way. So the idea of a composer doing something new, creating a new world, that seems totally natural for us. But Beethoven was really the first guy, in my opinion, to really do this. And this Third Symphony is really the first piece to really do this. And this last movement of the Third Symphony is a set of theme and variations. And in that, you come to the substance of it. It's a very simple little theme that after that loud introduction, you hear it there in the strings, pizzicato, and how he builds this entire movement from this little phrase. It's just a textbook for writing symphonic music.
Yes, you mentioned how people need to leave their preconceived notions about classical music at the door when they come in. And just listen to this and realize that, yes, when it was premiered early in the 1800s, it was brand new. No one had ever heard anything like this before. To our ears today, it's wonderful. But to think that that was brand new and very revolutionary as it was meant to be.
Yes, absolutely. And the thing I always want to encourage people, and this includes people who know classical music, is to be an active listener. So when you listen to this next movement, those first 6 or 7 seconds are a big loud introduction. Fine. Then you listen for the next about 10 seconds, I'd say 10 to 12 seconds. There is the theme. And every few seconds in this piece, that same theme is going to be played, but it's going to be put in an entirely different costume. It's like taking an actor and putting them in this costume in this play, putting them in that costume in that play, et cetera, et cetera, and trying to really follow, ooh, what's happening now? Immediately after those string pizzicatos, and you'll hear those string pizzicatos with a little woodwind answer. And then you will hear a small group. Just follow it. It's like reading a mystery novel with your ears. But if you really engage, and it's, believe me, you don't have to have done all the music school I did in order to have that experience.
What a great way to explain that. And I think our listeners are really going to love this recording. I know it's one of my favorites. It's with the Revolutionary and Romantic Orchestra. They're playing on period instruments, so it sounds a little bit different here. And they're conducted by John Elliott Gardner. My guest today is Kevin Rhodes from the Traverse Symphony Orchestra. He's the music director, among other things, also the music director in Springfield and with several ballet orchestras all around the world. Kevin, you've really done it all in your long and very fine career. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure to be there with everybody and you and listening to great music and sharing it with everyone.
As I was preparing for this, I, of course, looked you up on Facebook because that's what we all do nowadays, right? But it was on a Friday, and you were sitting at your piano and playing great tunes, standard tunes, really. And it looks like you do that every Friday. You present the tune of the day.
Right. Well, you know, that started, I mean, like everything nowadays, that started on some Friday. I can't remember what the occasion was, but we were having, you know, a happy hour here at home. And while my wife was going and, you know, cooking dinner, and I went out and played the piano. And she goes, "Oh, you should, you know, put that up on Facebook. I bet so-and-so might like that," or whatever. And so I did, you know, just putting me playing some song, I don't know, Misty or, you know, something like that. And oh my gosh, so many of my friends from all around the world were like saying, "Oh, that was so relaxing. That just wiped away all of my cares for the day. Oh, I really enjoy. Oh, it was so nice to spend that moment with you." It was really such a touching thing. And literally from people I know and care about, I thought, I said, "Okay, well, I'll do it again next week." And so then all these people started saying, "Oh my gosh, I wait for this every week." I mean, I don't. That's probably certainly an exaggeration on their parts, but very kindly accepted. So I just thought, "Okay, well, I'm just going to start doing this on every Friday until other things get in the way. Just share a song, or have a laugh or two." I believe that was part of somebody's theme song when I was a kid. So that's how that developed. And anybody and everybody's welcome to check out my Facebook. And I have two Facebook pages. Of course, I've got my own personal Facebook wall, which is all public. I don't do private stuff on Facebook. That seems like an oxymoron, right? I'm going to be private on Facebook. And then there's my quote unquote professional page, which is Kevin Rhodes Conductor. And actually, it occurs to me now when we're talking, I haven't been, you know, curating my pages so much in this lockdown time. So actually, I don't think I put any of my cocktail songs on my professional page. I think I'm just going to go ahead and do that. Then we have lots of different things that come out, of course, on the Traverse Symphony Orchestra page as well. And there's going to be a lot more stuff on that coming up in the fall.
So you're like providing a private piano bar every week, which is really nice. Thank you. And you're not playing classical music. Like you said, it's like cocktail music.
Absolutely. You know, I have a very comfortable relationship with genres of music that aren't classical. Now, I'm no jazz pianist, and I wouldn't even for half a second pretend to be a jazz pianist, but I do certainly love finding arrangements of things and stuff that I can do and have fun with, because I really secretly have always deeply admired jazz pianists. And speaking of jazz pianists, you know, we have the incredible Bob James up there in Traverse City, with whom we've collaborated a number of times, and he and I have done some two piano concerts, and as well as premiering his jazz concerto at the Tokyo Jazz Festival with the Tokyo Philharmonic several years ago. So I love all these different genres, even the ones I can't really do myself.
Do you perform still as a pianist?
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure. I do, you know, mostly only in the chamber music world with other, you know, collaborative colleagues. Although on a few, you know, as far as part of this Beethoven year, I did several, you know, sonata performances and lots of Beethoven chamber. And there was lots of Beethoven chamber music planned that all had to be canceled, and maybe we'll still bring some of that back, even though it's not Beethoven year in 2021. And then I have my old, I call it my old circus act, where I play and conduct the Rhapsody in Blue from the piano, which I've been doing since I was a kid. So that thing I can always do.
But we can see that other side of Kevin Rhodes on Facebook, and every Friday playing the cocktail music. So that's really nice. Thanks for that. And you mentioned, too, that lots coming up with the Traverse Symphony, those small things in big spaces, those important things. And thanks for that, too. So we will keep our eyes and ears peeled for those events, and we'll let folks know about those, too. One other piece of music that you suggested that is important to you is Leonard Bernstein's Overture to Candide, and this is such a fun piece. Why is this important to you?
Oh, my God. Well, you know, Leonard Bernstein is important to me. You know, his West Side Story was one of the first complex pieces I conducted when I was 17, with a full orchestra and with my local community theater when I was a kid, and sort of the example that he set of being, you know, being a if you'll pardon the expression, a teacher for the masses about music. And, you know, and then, of course, all of his incredible compositions, not just West Side Story, but his symphonies, his chamber music, his choral works. It's really, oh, my gosh, I just love his music so much. And the Candide Overture, and, of course, I have to say, when I started in Vienna, at the Vienna State Opera, this was only about 4 or 5 years after he passed. And so his connection to the orchestra was still very vibrant. I mean, there's still probably about easily half a dozen, if maybe more, a few more, but maybe up to a dozen folks in the orchestra who played with Bernstein. And when I was in high school, I watched his whole series of Beethoven symphonies with the Vienna Philharmonic. And I remember when I first went into that orchestra pit, the first time I conducted them, and which was a performance, seeing all these faces I knew from videos, films with Bernstein.
Oh, so, wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Believe me. That. And because when you go and do something there as a new conductor, you don't conduct a rehearsal of anything. Pieces are, so to speak, in repertoire, meaning they just come every year and the orchestra knows them and just plays them. And you go and conduct. And if you can't manage that without rehearsal, well, then you don't come back. So the first time I conducted them was in a live performance with a sold out house behind me. And so I'm just like trying to hold on and think about what I've got to do. And then I realized that's the oboist. Oh my God. I remember him playing the solo in symphony number 7 with Bernstein. I remember that guy playing the trumpet. So I remember that guy at the concert.
I saw them on TV. Like, oh, how surreal.
Right. What am I? Yeah, it was quite surreal. And I don't know how I managed to do it and still stay, not be kicked out of the house after the first intermission. But I managed for 25 years, so that's also okay. Anyway, so he's very close to me that way. And then this Overture to Candide, he himself described this as his own personal Valentine to Europe and European music. So for me, it's always felt like this incredibly perfect marriage of Americanness, Americana, the American musician, the American way, the American melting pot of musical styles as well as cultures, and European tradition, which is obviously, I think, I'm certainly not the only American musician who can relate to this world of trying to blend our own history with all of this music that comes from a different part of the world. And so I think this Candide Overture does it, and it's fun as heck.
And here it is. And here he is, Leonard Bernstein. He's conducting the Los Angeles Philharmonic.